Come on.
All right, so to get into the last session of the day, we've got Richard Naylor from R2, who's been stuck in his van all week. But we've let him out, and he's going to be talking to us about biggish networks.
Yep. Okay, thank you. And to those watching the stream, I apologise. I don't know what Jeremy's doing in the van. Hopefully something's working. This talk was as a result of some email stuff thrown on the list. And, of course, if you open your mouth on the list, you get fingered for a talk. Then it didn't appear on the timetable. Then on Friday, Neil emailed me and said, how's that talk going? We have a hole in the timetable. I left some of the photos in Wellington. Some of them were drawn up on bits of paper last night. So it's not 100% complete. Some of the nice photos that you really should see are still actually photos in Wellington. So anyway, what are we going to do? It's really something that Keith talked before about, this broadband rollout, I mean real broadband rollout. And so what I wanted to really challenge you about is what I've called biggish networks. That is, we're talking about 100,000 to a million connections, they're fibre, and they're all gigabit. Okay? What are the issues that you can, and why would they be gigabit? Well, you all know that sorry Mr. Cisco, you're paying less than $45 for a whole mini G-Bicky thing. So those prices, you just give everyone gigabit. So what are the implications? What are the things that you and I have to think about? And we should start thinking about them now, because probably in the next 5 years, we're going to have to make it work. The reason why I've said 100,000 homes is that in a city the size of Wellington, and I mean Wellington City, not Hutt Valley, Porirua or any of that, Wellington City is 100,000 homes. So it's not an unfeasible area to be working with. Right, so we have to fly through. So what are the issues? How big is it going to be at layer 1, 2 or 3? Is it going to be Ethernet? Is it going to be something else? What is the length of fibre that you're going to run? Have you thought about termination densities? How are you going to power this thing? And can you actually get the switchport densities that we need? So we're going to fly through this. There's network topology issues. And, I want you to be thinking, because, as I said, we're probably all going to have to be answering this in the next 5 years. Will we finally get multicast? Hopefully it will be V6. But these are the issues we have to think about and think about seriously. So I looked at some other similar-sized networks that are fairly big. There's some obvious ones like the roads. The ones that you don't see very often are the drains. You only typically see them when things go wrong and we get more traffic than the drains can handle, and then you normally see it fairly spectacularly. And there's no quads, you're right. The other rule of being an engineer is always carry gumboots in your van. The reason I put fresh is that often water is known as dirty water and clean water, so I thought I'd simplify and put fresh. I have to confess I spent about 14 years in the power industry. And so what you're going to see is based on the electrical network in Wellington. So first of all, I have some photos. Oh, sorry. You should know those people. This is the sort of utility stuff. It's boring. People drive past it every day and don't even notice it. Dated 1935. This is where the photos, the ones that I should show you, are stuck in Wellington. There's some really, really classy ones that, to show you what it's like building some of these other networks. So there's some interesting buildings that, you just go past and don't realise what's in them. And there's some interesting engineering issues. Some of these are really ancient. I mean, this is down on Thornton Quay. It's quite a big substation, but there's that one. There's about 12 of those. It's called a capital or zone substation. And we're actually going to, I don't have drawings for this. This is Moore Street. It's a 33 kV to 11 kV substation. Then you get these other ones, and this is around actually the hotel I'm staying at in Auckland. This is those little, what we call berm or kiosk substations. You normally keep a stock of a couple of dozen in the yard. They catch fire every now and then, and you basically swap them out overnight, or you used to. Some of them are fiberglass. The fiberglass wasn't very good because it does burn. In Wellington, they were taller because you had an oil tank on the top. Because it's the oil in the tank is cooler, and so it meets the air at a cool oil surface that doesn't absorb moisture, whereas Here, there's no conservator, so it's hot oil meeting the air. So you get acidic oil a bit faster. So this also comes out of, with the recent power problem in Wellington. Someone said to me, how does it work? So I'm going to draw the power network in Wellington and explain how you can actually black out half of Wellington without blacking it out, which is something we used to have to do. I should have had PowerPoint slides. I don't. Were there any more photos? They come later. So I'm sorry this is drawn. Basically, Transpower have 110 kV and 220 kV networks. They go into switches, onto bus bars. These are the things on the big towers that people don't like. There's actually normally a switch here called a bus coupler. Then you have transformers down to 33 kV, which feed substations like that. That's about 60 megawatts. There's quite a lot of them around Wellington City. When you go, if you know the James, what I call the James Cook Hotel, you know the James Cook, hands up? Okay, when you stand there waiting for the taxi, look at the tiles and you'll find there's an area like that with a brass ring around it. The whole tile area lifts out because underneath you is one of those. They lease the airspace above the substation. If you go down the parking building one floor, listen, you'll hear the 120 hertz hum. Big enough to drive a forklift around. The floor comes out of the car park so they can lower a forklift down to get the tanks and the transformers out. Hopefully they'll never have to. So this goes down through another switch to 33 bars, and then you have cables that go off to 110 goes off also to Central Park and Kaiwhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawhakawh off, so we don't have power for that. Let me just get power. So this is like a star network, except it's got two layers, 110 and 220 kV. From the utility side, the 33 comes in, the transformer, no circuit breaker to save money. So 33 kV substation like that, and then off here you have, I don't know, about six switches. The switches are the size of your 6 foot racks. Cables out the back are the size of my arm, they're 11 kV. And the technicians climb inside the switch gear and stick probes up inside it and things like that. And so you just have these switches going out, but they go out to other substations, which go out to other substations, which go out to other substations. Those substations, if it's residential, look like that. Every building in Wellington, above about four floors, has one of these in it. If it's a really big building, like about 10 or more, there will be three cables going in. Okay? Oh, maybe I should do a different colour. And these switches are closed all the time. Basically, you measure what goes into the cable and what comes out. You have a telephone circuit called the pilot signalling between the two ends. And if one end says, I'm putting in 400 amps, the other says, well, I'm not getting it, then both ends open. Okay, because obviously you've got 400 amps going out in the middle somewhere. You have those NZD, sorry, Transpower substations built in Central Park, and they'll be feeding multiple of these onto switches, which will be feeding out into substations. And then you have go across zones, so they'll go across there. But you keep those open until, of course, if you lose this cable, lose the transformer, you close the bus coupler, or if you lose that whole substation, as Wellington did the other day, you run around and close those, and you feed across the city in a big mesh. So one day when we were working, the insulators at Wilton had reached some critical age, and they were blowing up sort of at random periods of time, which was spectacular but not particularly good. So they said, can we turn the power off? And we said, no, people like their power. But on Saturday night, you can, as of 2 o'clock. So basically we cut here, or opened the switches, and we closed here, and we actually fed the city off Central Park. So we took out half the city's transmission network, but fed, the load was right down low. Why is it important?
It's kind of like spending.
It's like spanning tree. So why I'm asking this is to say, right, how are you going to do 100,000 homes or connections at gig? Is it going to be just one big flat network? Are you going to have suburbs? And are we going to route between them? Are we going to route up? How are we going to do it? Because the traffic flows aren't going to be small. Those routers are going to be pretty substantial. What are they going to look like? That's an exploring. All right, more photos. The other issue is, how are we going to terminate the fibre? Each of these joints holds, 144 fibres. Well, that sounds a lot, especially when you're trying to do it. 144 fibres out of 100,000 homes isn't much. Currently you terminate into FDFs or RTC 1.5s or whatever, you get 24 fibres in a frame that big. Okay, so a rack like this has got about 180 fibres in it. That's a full 6-foot rack. That's not even a street. The fibre people say, yeah, we think we can squeeze 48 fibres in a drawer now. They haven't told the jointers. But that's what they think. So if that works, then okay, we will get reasonable densities. But how much of the suburb are we going to cover? The other thing to consider is, who's seen a 1U 48-port switch that takes those little mini GBIC thingies? Oh, they are made. Cool. I couldn't find them. I mean, googling around looking and couldn't find them. I didn't think they existed. I saw 24s, but I couldn't get 48s. All I could find was those expensive blades that no one can afford. So I wanted to say, this is Wellington, this is actually more than 100,000. This is the mesh blocks. And historically, I can roughly recall whether there's actually about 1,200 substations, and I can remember where most of them are, and actually I still have keys for them. that's Tawa where I live, and this is the Tawa mesh block. The reason I got this is that part of this talk was I was going to colour in and show you where the substations are, so you get an idea of how many it takes to feed this. Like, there's one by my sister's house, there's one down there, there's one of those big 33 kV subs there by the petrol station, there's two along the main road here. So there's probably about 20 just in that mesh block for 1,200 homes. Okay, so that's the sort of, that's a Google map with my house. And that's what it looks like. The substation to feed this is the size of a the fibre sort of gear you're going to have to put in to feed this is the size of at least a garage. So in Wellington there's about 40 mesh blocks. You're going to need 40 buildings the size of a garage just to terminate the fibres, put the switch gear in. Then you've got to think about, we're coming up there. What are you going to feed these people if they've all got gigabit connections? Not that popular, sorry. Some of the early work we did at the City Council when we were challenged to do at least come up with the concepts of fibre to the home, and it was John Corey who came up and said, hey, we're going to need 1,200 of these nodes. I said, what sort of nodes? He said, like big squid caches. That's the only way we'll feed it. So the sort of the Keller app has been video on demand. And we don't mean it's going to stream to you. We mean no, you'll just download it. Which means it'll be something like a big squid cache. So like 3 to 4 terabytes. Except there'll be 1,400 of them or 1,000 of them. How are you going to administer 1,400 squid caches? You know, you have to manufacture, and that to be cheap, by the way, because no one's paying for anything. How are you going to do for the what we call the live events? How are you going to stream? By then, of course, we will do real high quality. We can now do 10 megabit streams. So if I suddenly turn and say, yes, I want to service 100,000 homes at 10 megabit connections or 10 megabit streams, how are we going to do it? Do we have to have 1,000 reflectors or 1,200 reflectors around the city? These are the issues. Now, there is something that makes it even interesting. 10 minutes? Oh, I'll be less than that. I'm running out. I told you, there's no photos. I discovered that IEEE have got this thing called the 802.1 AVB, which originally was for home AV networks. Hands up those people with home AV networks, like plugged into the TV or something. Oh, fewer than I thought. Not as many gigs here. Anyway, finally, IEEE, they were obviously having the problem with getting video around their lounges, so they came up with a new network standard. It is highly time-capable. So it's like when you're in the kitchen and you walk into the lounge, the video doesn't change. It's actually the same event. I've forgotten what the three real things they put in there. It's got a self-establishing, you know, it discovers other things. They are switches. It's a modification to the Ethernet packet to get time-critical stuff. I thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, you see a few of these come along. Until I'm reading this magazine I get called Broadcast Engineering, and they came out with that. That is a typical television station. Okay? So, where is it? Here's the news studio. 3 or 4 cameras, the presenter's desk. The little news switcher. You've got the news editing rooms, you know, the people making, filing stories. The record room, because everything's still done on tape. What we call media transfer. There's the back-end servers and encoders. Comes across to master control here. There's backup in the main, and then it goes off to the on-air feed out here, and there's graphics and audio production, archive. There are a few other things I've got in here. And so I thought, oh, that's interesting. Finally a graphic that shows it all. Here it is running 802.1 AVB, i.e. Ethernet. It was like, you can't be serious. You know, the standards people are still doing it and are talking about it for home networks. Here's the broadcasters who are very, like the telcos, really, really conservative. You know, if it doesn't have a King's Trikes connector, they won't talk to you. So they think we're really freaky when we turn up for an RJ45. Master control, news and studio, news editing, news record, media transfer, archive, all the same functions, it's just Ethernet switches. So I thought, what about in a metro or residential environment where instead of going on air, you just have, no, to check if you know the photos and things. Oops, no. What about if we build this big network with switches that are capable of 802.1 AVB? You then effectively have a time-critical network, it'll probably be multicast, from here all the way into person's lounge. Is that what we're going to design? Now, anyone from Cisco, please take note. We want that in silicon quickly. We want it in the switches. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Does that mean we can now take high definition, you know, 1080p at 20 megabits, multicast, and replicate it to 100,000 or a million homes? Because that's the challenge. So that's the talk. We can rub this crap out. The idea being, think about it, ask questions, go read the IEEE website, start the debate now because we have to do it in 5 years. And we might have a government that's actually found the money to pay for it. Thank you.
All right. Questions?
The AVB stuff, did you ever run across isochronous Ethernet?
Sorry?
Isochronous Ethernet. It's...
It's in there. I mean, I haven't read all the PDFs by the time. They've already been going for years.
I'm just reminded of isochronous Ethernet, for those who weren't around in the early 90s, was a proposal which died for reasons that will soon become obvious, which said take 10 meg Ethernet and add a 6 megabit video channel over the top of it. To which most of us, at the same time, they're working on the early 100 meg stuff. So what ended up happening, of course, is everybody says, well, if you've got enough bandwidth, you don't need quality of service, so we'll just do Ethernet at 100 meg, and what's the 6 megabit rubbish, we'll just forget about it. And I can't help imagining that a simple Ethernet network at gigabit speeds doesn't really need...
You've got to remember that it's coming out of the cameras at 3 gig.
Right.
Okay. You have to remember, I mean, the switcher in the van is a 1.4 gig switcher. So all the cables you see...
But you're going to give 3 gig to the punters?
All the cameras that you see here are connected to the van at 1.4 gig.
But are you going to give 3 gig to the punters?
Why not?
Are you just going to ramp this up to 10 gig and be done with it?
That's what these guys are talking about. In the studio, it is, you know, multiple 3 gigs off each camera's 3 gigs, and they're talking about in at 10 gig into the switches. That's what they're talking about. That's why it's scary. And by the way, of course, you have the people at home who want to make their home movies and put them out. Remember, this is symmetric, Don. We won't talk about the quality.
Not to mention their home living crisis.
This is your worst nightmare.
You've got to remember that, in 5 years, they're saying, we want to deliver 1 gig E to the home. The reason they're saying fibre is because in 5 years it might be 10 gig. It could be 100 gig. You know, the fibre's capable, it's just the gear at the end that's driving it. No, I'm not. But what I'm saying is that, what's 3 gig?
You've got to think there's a sweet spot. You just saw me draw and say, yes, we can do 220 kV, and in the UK and most of the rest of the world it's 400 kV, but you don't have 400 kV to your home. You know, you sort of all found that 230 volts is enough, at 60 amps is enough for the average home. So what is enough for the average home in terms of bandwidth?
I also had one other question was... Your protocol with the time dependence, I don't see the point in delivering it from the studio to the house, because as a consumer right now, I don't want to see my media when the TV company wants me to see my media. I want to see my media when I see it.
But they want you to, because then it makes it easier for them to target ads.
Yeah, but they can produce it at any time.
The killer app has always been, sorry, I shouldn't say always been, since about the early 90s when we were playing, has been video on demand, exactly what you're saying, time shifting. But there is still a place for it live. Why is it that we've got people watching this event today who, if they wait till Monday, can actually watch the recordings? Why on election night, or during the Olympics, or through the weekend with the yachting out at North Head, why are people watching? Why did people watch the tennis last night? They just want to see it. There's something about live that we would like to see.
Alrighty. Thank you, Richard.
They're very quiet if they're sleeping. Yeah.